Let's give him a hand.
Appreciate that. Thank you, everybody. How much time do I have, just so I know when to shut up?
Anybody?
3 hours. Oh, good. Great. About how long I prepared for. If you do public speaking, you know, the shorter you preach, the more you have to prepare. Joan has some handouts that we're going to be using. We're going to talk today about this thing we call equal business stature. Now, I planned on, somebody might have to share, we have 25 handouts. So if some of you are cozy with one another, you can look on with your neighbor. So a little bit about our background. I own a company called Stronghold Remodeling. We got into the remodeling industry by accident. I realized that you have to do something to feed a family, so I started a little handyman business, which grew into a remodeling company. By the time this is probably in the late 90s, I'm working on an average of 90 hours a work week and stretched really thin. In fact, my two oldest children, there's about a 5-year span of time that I have almost no recollection of. They're between probably, I would say 9 and 14, because I was working too much. And I knew something was wrong. And my wife, Joan, who's right there helping me, Joan was a member of the National Remodeling Association, and she climbed the ladder to ultimately be the national president and chairman of the board. In that process, she started rubbing shoulders with people who were remodeling contractors that were making a lot of money. Now, in remodeling, I didn't know you could actually make money. I was just trying to make a living. And so after figuring out what the common denominator was with all these folks is one thing, they were all involved in Sandler training. So we didn't know what Sandler training was, but we knew we needed that. So we ended up buying a franchise, and we have over 250 training centers worldwide, actually. So a little bit over dramatic here, but Sandler really introduced me to some concepts that revolutionized how I look at business and business development. Really changed my approach to selling, my approach to business development, mentoring, and employee development. So I thought I'd share with you this concept that we train. It's called equal business stature. So if you follow along with me in your handouts, that second slide, there's three types of selling systems. One is the traditional selling system. So in that traditional selling system, it requires you to have a lot of people skills, a lot of enthusiasm. How many have taken Dale Carnegie? Any Dale Carnegie graduates? All right, good. Dale Carnegie teaches us, act enthusiastic and you'll be enthusiastic. Any devotees of Tom Hopkins? Tom Hopkins fans out there? Nobody? Wow, all right, good. Zig Ziglar? Zig Ziglar, all right. So, anybody know Charlie Tremendous Jones? Wow, Charlie Tremendous Jones. I got to meet Charlie when I was 9 years old. My dad was in the insurance business, sold life insurance, and he was an agency manager in the Midwest. And he had a standing deal with Charlie. If Charlie was in the neighborhood, my dad would get a charter plane, pick him up, and Charlie would come speak for my dad's agency. So I got to have a plane ride with Charlie Tremendous Jones. He's famous for a couple of things, but one quote I love from Charlie is, "You are the same person you were yesterday or 10 years ago, except for the people you know and the books you read." So he was a voracious reader. The other thing Charlie's famous for is he made a commitment his first year in insurance. How many folks are in insurance business? Any insurance folks here? One. His commitment to himself his first year in business was he would sell one policy every week. He would, and he said in the end of his first year, he personally owned 17 policies. So love Charlie Tremendous Jones. And all of this traditional sales approach has a lot to teach us. It teaches us that people want to be inspired. They want you, if you're in sales. How many are in business development or sales? Probably all of us. If you're in business development or sales, you've got to be inspiring. You've got to be the kind of person that has self-confidence and poise. You need to know how to carry yourself. the problem with the traditional selling process is it has been trained by the buyers. Buyers tend to educate sellers how they want to be sold. And without knowing it, we were trained how to sell by our parents and our grandparents. It's a generational thing that's passed down. Well, probably about the 80s, mid-80s, they started developing other selling systems, like how many have heard of spin selling? Those are solution-type selling. So solution selling is really about doing some version of a needs analysis, finding out what problem your prospect has, and then helping them see how you'll fix it. Now, this type of selling is it's very intellectual in nature. How many would agree with the statement that people buy emotionally? Right? We make buying decisions emotionally. If you are giving your prospect a lot of information, is that emotional or intellectual? It's intellectual. And we have a rule in Sandler, the confused mind says no. You might want to jot that down. The confused mind says no. You give someone too much information, their brain goes into shutdown mode, and most people who are in the solution selling business, we have two problems. By the way, I have a degree in both of these type of selling, traditional selling, relationship-based, spin selling, which is intellectual-based. The problem, how many of you are fixers? Any fixers in the room? Yeah. The problem with solution-based selling is as soon as I hear a problem, what do I want to do?
Fix it,
right? And so I go, did somebody say close? Yeah, right? I want to close. I have found a problem. I can fix it. And I become JoJo the circus monkey. I'm wound up and I'm ready to show you exactly what you need to do. Well, you know what? As exciting and passionate as you are about your business, and oftentimes your clients reflect that same passion, and if you're not careful, you'll misinterpret their passion for fixing their problem with their passion for you. See, they don't really care about you. What do they care about?
Their problem.
Their issue. Their pain is the term we use in Sandler training. They have a pain. Pain comes in two flavors. Pain in the present. I have a pain now. I need it fixed. Pain in the future. I'm afraid there will be a pain, so I'm going to do something preemptive. For example, let's take dentistry. Any dentists in the room? Okay, you're good. How many have ever had a toothache that you deferred getting taken care of? Right? Got a toothache, it's bothering me. At some point, you decide, I can't take this anymore, and in spite of the reason you avoided it, anybody avoid it because they don't like that sound? Especially when your tooth is anchored to your jaw. Your jaw is connected to your skull. Your skull is a resonating chamber, and as soon as that sound, right, it's no thanks. I'll put up with my toothache until I can't stand it. The pain of change is less than the pain of staying the same, so I guess I'll change. So that's pain in the present. It compels people to buy. Every one of us in the room will have no problem selling someone who has pain in the present. They need what we have, we're there at the right time, and that convergence of those two stories results in a buyer and a seller uniting. It's when a buyer doesn't realize they have that pain in the present, maybe they have pain in the future. So how many of you do at least one dental checkup a year, teeth cleaning? Okay. And we do that because
we're told to,
yeah. It's the dentist business model. Love that answer. We do it for prevention, right? It's fear because I know what happens with tooth decay and I don't want that. Can I get an amen?
Yeah.
Right. So we don't want that tooth decay because we know what comes with it. So that pain in the future compels us to take action now. So solution selling causes you to get to that disease salespeople get called premature presentation. I'm sure if you've been in sales more than 6 months, you're guilty of that. At some point, somebody had a problem, and you knew you could fix it, and you rush in with all the vitality and energy you could, compelling them, because here's what our brain teaches us. We believe people will buy from us if they trust us. Right? Right? They're going to trust us if they know that we're an expert. Therefore, what's my job?
Show
off! I have to prove to them that I'm an expert. If I prove to them I'm an expert, then of course they're going to buy from me. And when, I don't know if you're this way, but for me, when I'm talking about something that I'm passionate about and I feel I have expertise towards, I get really excited and I stop listening. Right? I stop being aware of the issues that the client actually have. And I start thinking in terms of something that is important to me and may not necessarily be important to them. So at your tables, I want you to talk about these two selling systems that we've talked about so far, relationship-based selling, solution-based selling. Which of those two do you favor, or has your system developed a blending of those two? I'm going to give you about 3 minutes at your tables to talk about that. Go.
Think like relationships are only extreme about the like we don't want to make sense of them, but sorry to look at
second page, we're going to be talking today about a different approach to selling, which involves challenging the buyer. So see, if you were programmed the way I was, the buyer is always
right.
A customer is always, we've been taught to believe that the customer is always right. How many of you realize that is false? Right? If you gave them what they want, they would blame you for selling them the wrong thing, because most of them don't know what they really want. Because they don't know the options. How many of you have more options than the client is aware of when it comes to delivering your service? How many of you have been in front of a prospect at some point and they were arguing with you about what they wanted done, And everything in you said, that's not the right way to do it. Right? And we end up, oftentimes, more often than not, capitulating and giving them what they want, even though what they want is not what they need. So in order to stop the insanity of delusion, you've got to become a challenger. You've got to get comfortable challenging. I have to be very careful because my tongue will get away with me. I was going to say, challenge the stupidity of your clients, but I'm not going to say that. There are times where you really have to challenge someone with the decisions they want to make, because as much as they want to make it, it may not be the right thing. How many of you have delivered something at a lower price knowing that it probably wasn't going to solve the problem? Come on now. Right? We recognize that they want us to sharpen your pencil. You ever been told that? I like what you have to offer, Jim, but you got to sharpen your pencil. There's no way I'm paying this. And what does the relationship-based salesperson do? Going to cut their price because they have this thing called need for approval. I want you as a buyer to like me. And I know if you like me, you'll buy from me, because people buy from people they like. So when you say, really like where you're going, Jim, but man, this is way more money than I'm willing to pay, you're going to have to sharpen your pencil. My need for your approval can drive me to say, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, and do some version of negotiating. If there's a solution, if you're in solution-based selling, here's what you do. They say to you, like where you're going, Jim, but you know what? This is more money than I'm willing to spend. You're going to have to sharpen your pencil. I'm going to shift into value-based selling. And I'm going to start logically debating the buyer why it's in their best interest to spend more money. So now at this point, what am I doing? I'm pushing, right? I've become that stereotypical pushing salesperson saying, I get that that looks like a lot of money, but pick an industry, we'll pick remodeling. I realize my price is higher than my competitors, but the fact is, the way we run our business, all of my employees are covered in workman's comp, and we provide health insurance and retirement plans, and we just can't compromise those things. So you really get more value, right? You'll debate, you'll argue why your price is valid. The problem with an argument is anytime you make a statement towards someone else, what does that compel them to do? Resist. Absolutely right. They're going to resist. So if you're a challenger, here's what happens. Somebody says to you, really like the way this is going, Jim, but you know, it's just way too much money. I'm not going to spend that much money. You're going to have to sharpen your pencil. Well, I'm afraid we just won't be working together. Is that the decision you've made? Now what are they going to say?
See you, Vince.
You think?
No, they're going to question it.
They're going to question it. Why?
Because they've just been excluded.
They have been excluded, right? You're not keeping me out, and there's a reason they wanted the price in the beginning. So how many of you have to give bids in order to win business? So I'm bidding against someone else. In that bid scenario, there's a reason they're looking for a second price or a third price. So a challenger is going to say something like, you know, I can see why you would need me to give you a proposal, but I guess I'm curious. You've already talked to two other companies. Why haven't you hired one of them? Is a solution-based salesperson going to say that? No, they're going to create a compelling argument of why you should invest. Is a relationship-based salesperson going to say that? Not going to say it, because they don't want to risk losing the business. So if you look at this neato graph I have here, we call that the play zone. That's the zone where you are most effective interacting with your clients. If you go to the far right hand, you get to aggressive, demanding, dominating. Folks are not going to like you. That's not the way to sell. We don't want you to be demanding. We want you to be firm. We don't want you to be aggressive. We want you to be assertive. We don't want you to be dominating. We want you to have equal business stature. Far too often, salespeople fall in the lower red zone. Wimpy. Now, none of you are wimpy, I'm sure. But I was training a session a couple of weeks ago, and over 60% of the folks in that room admitted to wimping out under pressure and doing what the buyer wanted, even though it really wasn't in the buyer's best interest. Subservient. Have you ever been in a position of playing fetch with a buyer? We call it unpaid consulting. I didn't realize I was doing this until years later, but in my remodeling company, I'll give you the brief story. The thing that made my eyes open and I realized I have to do something different is I got a call from a buyer, a prospect, and they said, "You, Jim, your company just remodeled the house down the street. They loved what you did. They said you're a great designer. Would you come help us put together a project that we're interested in?" And this was, by the way, early November. What holiday comes in November?
Thanksgiving.
And December?
Christmas.
I had 36 employees at the time. 36 employees depending on me to sell for them. And all of our work was coming to a conclusion by mid-December. And I'm thinking, I'm going to be, instead of passing out Christmas turkeys, I'm going to be laying people off. How did I feel? Very, very bad. So when they called me, I thought, oh, thank you, Lord. I rush up there and I start talking with them. And she says, "Yeah, but we do have a problem. We got to get this started right away." Now, I got the disease salespeople get called happy ears. Anybody ever had happy ears? They say something you like, and you start glowing, right? And you start selectively hearing what they're saying. You get all excited and Twitter-pated about doing this project, and I stop listening because I got emotionally involved. I was stuck in the loop of relationship selling. By the way, they loved me, right? I spent the next 2 weeks, 60 hours of my time, putting together this project. I go to present it Friday evening. I show the plans to them. They loved it. They liked me. I said, "So I know you said you're in a hurry. Trial close. We all have trial closes. I know you said you're in a hurry. I've got a crew that's ready to start on Monday. If you'd like to sign the contract, we can get going." Guess what they said? Yeah, sharpen your pencil, we need to think about it. So I spent the weekend thinking about it, right? And I was so convinced they were going to buy, I assigned a project manager, I called BMC West and put the first load order together. I was ready to rock and roll because I knew that they were going to do this project with me. And Monday, I realized I had not committed to a time to talk to them. And so I spent all morning trying that Vulcan mind meld thing. I never got my hands right. Staring at the phone, saying, "Ring, ring, ring." And all afternoon I'm telling myself, if I call them, I'll look desperate. Anybody ever been there? Can't call them. Finally, I got to the point of so desperate, I call them at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. "Mrs. Smith, Jim Stevens, what did you and your husband decide?" Guess what she said? Not? Well, that would have been painful, but what she said was far worse.
Found
another contractor. That would have been brutal. This was worse.
Wait till the first of the year.
She said we didn't get a chance to talk about it. What the hell? How in the world can you? What? How hard is it? Nice kid, right? Yeah, nice kid. Good company. Neighbor said we should hire him. Yeah. Throw him a bone, for crying out loud. I need the job, right? Of course, what did I say to them? "Oh, that's okay. I was busy this weekend, too. I'm smart because I'm mad." And so I say, "Will you be able to talk about it tonight?" She says, yes. I said, let's talk tomorrow, say 10 o'clock, I'll call you. Yeah, and I'm getting a spine, right? 10 o'clock in the morning, ring, 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 voicemail. Next day, voicemail. Next day, voicemail. Now how do I feel? I feel pissed, right? I have been put out. And at least as much time as I put into this, they could answer the phone. How is it that they're always gone? So I grab my 21-ounce waffle-headed framing axe, and I grab a 16-penny nail, and I wrote a letter that I call the dirtbag letter, and I was going to do a Martin Luther, drive up to their house and nail this to their front door. At least you could have the courtesy to respond to me. But I pull up, guess what I see? Another contractor doing the job. I go to the building department, ask them about it. They said, yeah, those plans came through, and we saw that your logo was on the plan, so we took the liberty of cutting your logo off so you wouldn't be liable. Oh, thank you very much. When did that happen? Monday. So just this week? No. The previous Monday. See, I did not have equal business stature. I was subservient. I was in the wimpy zone. I was being accommodating. When they said, give me a bid, I didn't say, let's pretend I do. What happens next? Right? I didn't get any qualification for what was going on. Here, you might jot this down. You can't blame a prospect for doing something you didn't tell them they couldn't do. I didn't tell them they couldn't use my plan, did I? No. Why? Because I was in wimp junction. I did not see myself as having equal business stature. So what does, second slide down, what does equal business stature look like? Don't be bashful. Give and take. Okay, you're setting expectations. What else?
No cronyism.
What do you mean by that? I like that.
Family. Maybe isn't competent, but we'll give him a shot because...
Yeah, no cronyism. I love that. Equal business stature. What is it?
Mutual respect.
Mutual respect. It's you win and I win. It's not you win when I lose, right? So what is not, what doesn't equal business stature look like? There are... Go ahead.
You're being subservient to them.
Being subservient. I promise everybody who's in sales, you do things even now that hook subservience. When you're trying to book an appointment, if you say the words, I'd love to get together. I'd love to get together with you and just chat a little bit about. That's subservient. I'd love to. What would someone with equal business stature say?
What's a good time for you?
What's a good time for you? I'm not sure. So one of our strategies, next page, is the upfront contract. Bottom of that next page. Upfront contract is really establishing equal business stature. It is saying to them, look, I'm not sure it makes sense for us to get together. Why don't we take 10 minutes... have a brief exchange. If it's worth spending more time, good. If not, just an opportunity for two fellow Boiseans to have an opportunity to get to know one another. That's equal business stature. It's not this mother may I. And think in terms of that begging, pleading, mother may I tonality that people have when they... give me an example. What do you say? Anybody do cold calling? Okay, what do you say when you're cold calling? What's the first thing out of your mouth? You know, remember?
Hi.
Hi. How are you today? We call that a hate crime. Anybody use that? Hate? How are you today? That's the dumbest thing on the planet. Because you don't care and neither do they. If you're talking to somebody and you say, how are you today? What are they supposed to say? Fine, good. And then they're supposed to say, how are you? And you're supposed to say, fine. Now, if you violate that code, they say to you, how are you today? And you say, oh my gosh, I'm so glad you asked because I have had the worst week. And they start crying on your shoulder. What are you thinking? It was a hate crime. I hate this. Right? How are you today? It's a trigger. So try this. First words out of your mouth are these. Did I catch you at a bad time? Not, is this a good time? When you say, is this a good time, they're defensive. They're going to say, depends on what? Most of us are hardwired for honesty and integrity, and when somebody says, hey, did I catch you at a bad time? If it's a bad time, you're going to say yes. Or they're going to say yes, you're going to say, why don't I call you back, say about 2 o'clock. They'll say, fine. They don't know who you are, what you want, but you just turned a cold call into a warm call, right? Because you use the phrase, and it's an equal business stature terminology. Did I catch you at a bad time? When we look at chat becoming a challenger, we got to ask ourselves, what can we challenge? Because there's some things you can and can't challenge. So the slide on the top of page 3. Some of the things that I can challenge. I can challenge their problems, their processes, status quo, excuses, rationalization. I can challenge their preconception about the solution they need. When they say, I need you to do X, Y, Z, softening statement, make sense, reverse question, I'm not sure that's in your best interest. Why do you think you should do that? Now what are they going to say? They're going to ask you why. Why is it that you think it may not be in my best interest? See, instead of me pushing, you really shouldn't do that because if you do that, it's going to result in this. You're justifying and defending. You become that pushy salesperson as opposed to the person who says, you know, I can see why you'd like that to happen. I guess I'm curious that I don't think that's really in your best interest. What makes you think that's the right approach? Well, I've been told, now you're going to get some more information. The person who is a challenger is a trusted advisor. So if you think about the 5 levels of selling, there's the vendor, there's the service provider, there's the partner, there's the, I'm missing one, and then there's the trusted advisor. That trusted advisor is a person who's going to tell you, hey, do you know you have a piece of lettuce in your tooth, right? The trusted advisor is a person that's going to look at you and say, hey, your zipper's down, right? They're the person who will tell you what you don't want to hear, but it's in your best interest to hear it, right? Do you want to buy from somebody who's selling, or do you want to buy from a trusted advisor? Do you want to be a salesperson, or do you want to be a trusted advisor? Then you got to get out of Wimp Junction. You got to stop kowtowing and stop whimpering and stop caving in to what the buyers want, especially when what they want is not really in their best interest. Now, some of the things you can't challenge, don't challenge their dignity, their respect, their core values. Those type of challenges are rebounders. They will end up haunting you. Challenge intellectual beliefs, don't challenge moral beliefs. So some of the tactics that we use, I mentioned the upfront contract. Every single meeting you have starts with an agenda. We call it the agenda step, the upfront contract. And listen, 9 out of 10 salespeople do not do this. A sales call typically sounds like, if you're solution selling or relationship-based selling, you're going to go to the client, you'll spend 10, 15 minutes chit-chatting, and then you're going to say, so what do you want? And then they're going to tell you what they want, and then you're going to decide, can you help them? Using the upfront contract, you shift into intentional leadership, and you start by giving them permission to tell you no. Sounds a little bit like this. When we decided to meet together today, we both agreed to 45 minutes. That time's still going to work for you. Confirm the time. They say yes. You say, what would you like to get out of this meeting to make sure it's the best use of your time? Throw the ball to them. Find out what they tell you. However they answer it, you respond, for me, I'm going to need to ask you questions so that I get a better understanding of what you're looking for, and I'm sure you're going to have questions for me. And as an outcome, we're going to decide, do our questions and answers fit or not? And I want to let you know that if I determine that I can't help you, I'm going to say, sorry, I'm not your guy. Are you going to be okay with that? They say, sure. On the other hand, you willing to do the same for me? If you determine that you just can't see us working together, would you be willing to tell me, Jim, thanks but no thanks? They're going to say, sure. You're going to say, are you sure now? You strike me as a nice person. Some people tell me they'd like a proposal when what they really mean is they don't see us doing business together. So you're good telling me no? Oh, yeah, I'll tell you no. What just happened there? We became equal. I just told them I may disqualify them. And I gave them permission to disqualify me. Are both of those acceptable outcomes to a sales call? Do you think they don't know that they might not use you? Do you think they don't know that you might not want to work for them? So our job is to be, and this is the thing I love about the Sandler process, is it allows us to be totally transparent and very, very honest. So just to check the time, when do I wrap up?
About now.
Sure glad I asked. So top of the next page talks about what hoops are you jumping through. I put in here some of the common things that you're going to hear from clients. Things like, we're just not ready, why don't you come back in a while? This looks really good. Those of you that have given a proposal, they say, gee, this looks really good. Why don't you call on me in a couple of weeks? We'll let you know what we determined. If you agree to that, you hit wimp junction. Right? We look for what we call a clear future. Clear future means we have mutually agreed to exactly what happens next and what decisions will be made at that next meeting. A clear future is a booked date, a time, and an agenda. Anything short of that is not a clear future. Somebody who is wimpy is going to settle for chase, right? Somebody who is too aggressive is going to say, I'm not going to follow up with you. You're not buying today. You're not buying ever. Neither one of those extremes work. We want to get mutual respect and mutual agreement. The key to this, the last slide, is your belief system. If you believe you are equal, you will be equal. If you believe you are subservient, you will be subservient. If you believe you are better than, you will act better than. So to get to equal business stature, we have to check our beliefs. And the best example I have that is Joan and I were on a trip from... we were at John Wayne Airport. Anybody know what's close to John Wayne Airport? Disneyland. We were at Disneyland flying up to Seattle. About halfway during the flight... The pilot says, in really, you could hear in his tone grave concern. Folks, I need you in your chairs right now. Flight attendants, you need to be buckled in. We are going to experience some sudden, unanticipated turbulence. And he barely finished those words, and it felt like the air just dropped out from under the plane. Have you been on a plane when it did that? It slams down, and you feel jolted down into your seat. And we're sitting on the wings, and I'm looking up, and those wings are literally flapping, right? And then the next thing is the seatbelt abdomen pressure. You feel like you're weightless. And now I start hearing whimpering in the front. I can hear people praying. I mean, white knuckle, it was bad. And I was starting to get nervous until three rows behind us, there was a family. Mom, dad, six kids. Where had they just been? What did they think this was? All right, that's exactly right. And so they started going, wee! And they put their hands up, and when the bottom dropped out, they'd go, woo! And it was like contagious from the back of the plane to the front of the plane. Everybody started it really turned into a fun ride. What was the difference? Nobody told those kids we were about to die. They thought this was fun. As we're deplaning, I catch the pilot's eyes, and he looks at me, shakes his head, and he says, "This is the damnedest flight I've ever been on." So your belief is going to determine whether you have equal business stature or you are subservient or arrogant. Choose equal. Thank you very much. If you have any questions, you can reach out to us. Our contact information is right there.